What's up, buds? Welcome to the Creative People Podcast. My name is Ryan Leacock, and this is the podcast for those of us who don't feel prepared. Today, I have a very special treat for you. I'm chatting with choreographer and personal So You Think You Can Dance favorite dancer Stacey Tukey is on the podcast today, and I could not be more thrilled. Stacey tells me about her road to becoming a dancer and a choreographer and director. She tells me about how she got on So You Think You Can Dance, plus some really inspiring behind-the-scenes bits that you won't want to miss. We talk about the energy suck of perfectionism and knowing what you want and going for it. Stacey is overflowing with advice for dancers, but really all creatives. You know, most of us are not as physical as dancers, but in terms of like art, we're doing a lot of the same things. She tells me about the mentorship program she's running for the next generation of dancers and the mentors in her own life that led her to create that. This is a fantastic episode. I am so excited to share it with you today. So I think that's enough bumper chat. Let's get right into it with choreographer Stacey Tukey. Start rolling if that's all right.
Sure. Hi everyone, I'm Stacey Tukey. I am a dancer, choreographer, director, dance educator, mama, and also the founder of the Protégé Movement, which are dance wellness experiences for dancers ages 13 and up, and the Bridge Movement, which is a full year-round pre-professional training program for dancers that have finished high school.
Nice, nice. When did all that start? Last two programs.
Well, Protégé Movement started in 2016, okay. And it started with a camp. And I was inspired because when I was younger, I went to a dance camp called Fusion Dance Camp in Canada. I met some of my mentors that kind of took me into my professional career there. So I always had this idea to want to do something like that. And I also had the idea of wanting to integrate just wellness, like how to take care of our bodies, mental health, all these things. And we do it actually outside of Calgary. It's at, we rent a camp and we turn the barns into dance spaces. And it's just this magical week where it's just a bunch of artists exploring. There's no cell phone service. It's all about connection. Like all the dancers get to be fast friends because of course they're not texting. They're actually connecting. And it's just this beautiful space. And so that started, 2016. And the Bridge Movement started 2020, like a lot of things in the pandemic. The world stopped. I was about to open a brand new show in Pittsburgh, came back. And as the pandemic was going on, it started with just like, you know, maybe I should start teaching online, kind of open the community. And I was thinking, there's no way. Like what I do is about connection. We can't do this online.
Yeah.
And long story short, I started mentoring individual dancers that were about to go into their professional careers. And I've always had this like passion for that jump, right? Like what's after dance competition? Like what, how do we get to the next place? And I started kind of coaching one-on-one and all these dancers repetitively kept saying like, well, I was going to move to New York, but now the pandemic, I'm stuck, or I was going to go to college, or I don't know what I'm going to do. So I literally got off one day and like I do, I was like, okay, this doesn't exist, but I'm going to create this program. I want to create a program that kind of centers on versatility. So you basically are prepared for anything that the career could throw at you and also gives you the tools to be able to succeed in this dance world and in post-COVID and in, you know, social media. And so a lot of it is stemmed in mental health as well as like financial wellness classes, as like how do you support yourself as an artist essentially.
Amazing.
As well as how do I take care of my body? You know, I've had many injuries in my career, so yeah, it started online in 2020, and now this is our, we're completing our third year in person, and it's here in New Jersey, so.
Oh, wow. That is so cool. I love hearing that, too. Like, just, like, obviously, dance is, like, a very physical art form, so you need to have that bigger conversation. But, like, just even for any creative, being able to have that full person conversation and get coaching there, it's, like, it's so needed.
Yeah. And I find that now, like, as I'm in the industry hiring dancers and I'm like, also, I've kind of I've been in that, in their shoes. I've been in like the dancers about to embark on their career, kind of feeling lost, kind of feeling like I just got to excel at dance. And now I'm on the other side of it when I'm like hiring dancers and working as a director and choreographer. And it's like, it's so much more than 5, 6, 7, 8. It's so much more than this. Like, you need the dancers to have great energy. You need them to be professional. They need to also be able to balance their own head games that are happening. And I've seen so many dancers just quit. It doesn't matter what school they go to. They don't have the actual real life skills that it takes to balance the talent. You know, you need both parts. And so, that's kind of what we center on. And I'm so proud of our dancers that have graduated and what they're going on to do and seeing them just how they operate in the world, you know, it goes beyond dance. It's kind of like, it's for life.
Yeah. I love that. That's so just refreshing and just, that's amazing. How about for you? Well, let's start kind of where your students kind of are at that kind of, can you fill me in on how this all started with you and how you got to that point and stuff like that?
Yeah, well, I grew up the daughter of a studio owner. My mom has a dance studio. She's had it for, I'm probably going to get it wrong, but it's over 55 years maybe. So growing up, her first dance studio was in our house, the basement of our house. So I never knew not being in a dance studio. Yeah. I remember my earliest memory is I used to creep downstairs and I used to hide behind the curtain and just watch the dancers, the senior dancers, go across the floor. And I must have been like 3 or 4, just watching them. And so I basically was thrown into dance very early on and was kind of a studio kid. I was always around. I'm not sure if that cultivated my love or if I always would have been a dancer. It's hard to say, but that definitely was hard. And I had excellent training and I had, you know, my mom there just pushing me and, you know, encouraging me. So when I was 8 years old, I turned to my mom and I said, I'm going to be a professional dancer. And I remember it. Like, I was just like, this is matter of fact, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I now have a just turned 9-year-old daughter and my daughter's not like that. She loves dance, but she does a lot of different things, but I had a love for it and I really wanted to do it. And I had a little bit of a bumpy start. I graduated high school and I was very focused on a lot of different styles, but I really excelled at ballet. And I thought that's what I wanted to do. I want to be in a ballet company because that feels like the top to me. And when I was 17 in grade 12, I was over at the Adeline Genet Awards, which was a ballet competition representing Canada. And I felt my shins. I was in a lot of pain and I thought I had shin splints. And it turned out when I got rushed to the hospital after I got home from the competition, I had stress fractures halfway through both my tibia, which were to the point that the doctor said that basically a few more steps and both my tibias could snap. And I would have a metal rod from my ankle to my knee and I would not be able to walk without a limp, let alone dance. So this is 17 years old. I've only known dance. I've excelled to this point. I think the world is my oyster and I get this news and they say you might never walk again.
Oh my goodness.
So this was 17 and I basically was out of dance for an entire year. I thought he was going to say 2 weeks off and he said 1 year. And I just was like, I had never stopped for a week in my life, let alone a year. And so that year was really challenging. And I like to share this part because I know there's so many dancers that get injured or so many people that get kind of like something thrown in their way. And I went into like a depression. I didn't know myself outside of dance. I wasn't able to bear weight on my legs. So I was like swimming. I went to university for a year. I wasn't able to dance at all. About 6 months into it, I got really, really low. And then there was a point where I was like, okay, I got to switch my mindset because it's either I'm going to sink or I'm going to swim. Like, let's go. And so I started visualizing myself healing and like getting better and getting stronger. And I started taking up things that I like to do that had nothing to do with dance, just to keep myself occupied. And a year later, my legs healed and I went on to start my career actually with, you know, training underneath a professional ballet company. And I was really lucky to heal and to have that experience. But I remember, first of all, not knowing how is this going to happen? How am I going to actually make it? Am I going to be able to do it? But I learned really early on that the power of the body and also learning how to take care of it is really super important. So that's kind of how I started my career. And then I was in Vancouver and from Vancouver, I took a trip to New York, saw New York, fell in love, have to be there. and went back home. I mean, it's kind of a long story because I'm Canadian too. So it was a long trajectory, but I ended up in New York, and that's really where my career really kind of started to take off. But
yeah, that's so crazy that at 17, you almost had to look at the possibility of like, this could be gone for my life. Like, oh my goodness. And it, and like, kudos to you for, I don't know, something inside of you was like, no, I can't, like, you had to make that decision to go one way or the other. And wow.
Yeah. And I remember also thinking, and I say this out loud, because I run into, again, so many dancers that are getting injured at different stages of their life. And I remember just thinking, like, people saying, like, people being like, you can't do it. Like, you're not going to do it. It's not going to heal. And this, and that. And I just was like, I don't believe it. Like, I think this body is going to heal. And just that, like, mind over matter, like, it really, truly, the body's miraculous. And I can say now that, like, since then, I've had an ankle surgery and I've had 5 hip surgeries, 2 total hip replacements and a total hip revision. So I know about working through injury and also what your body can go through. And I think, like, learning that early on, I thought I was invincible up until 17. And then this happened and I was like, okay, we got to pay attention, I guess.
Did that affect, like, going forward? Like, do you think that kind of realization and that stop, do you think that had a lasting effect?
Well, I want to say that it was the first time I had awareness that something could stop me. I honestly, up until then, I danced through every injury. If I was sick, I danced. Nothing was didn't stop me until this was like, you can't walk, so you can't dance. So I want to say that, yes, it was the first time I had awareness around it. And also, I think when you learn to build up a tolerance against pain, kind of like, to be honest, a lot of the times I didn't listen to my body. I pushed through because that was the only way. I didn't want to be replaced. I wanted to keep going. I wanted people to, you know, think that I was invincible. And for a lot of times, like, when you're young, you kind of are. And now, looking back, I wasn't listening to my body so much. And it was a it wasn't a lesson that at 17, sadly, it didn't change everything from then on. I still had to relearn that lesson over and over again. And that's why I'm so passionate about teaching dancers to connect to their bodies and to understand that the body is so wise. And yes, as dancers, we have to put our bodies through a lot of things. And also, when it gives signals that there's pain, there's ways to rest and take care. And then that's going to serve you better in the future.
Yeah, that's, I like, not a dancer, but I think that's just good advice, period. Like, same with like mental health. And sometimes your body's telling you, like, pump the brakes, and you just push through, right? And then it comes back to get you.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about creativity? When did you, were you a creative kid? I mean, like, obviously that performing and the dance bug got you, but was creativity mixed in there, or did that come after?
It's interesting, because I don't remember, like, I mean, as a child, I think I was pretty creative. I mean, but it was always, it was pretty based around dance. I mean, I also, like, was a figure skater, and I was like a baton twirler, and I did a lot of things around kind of the arts.
Yeah.
But I never, like, painted or, like, went to, like, played an instrument. I didn't do any of that. I was really, like, super hyper focused on dance, but I was, like, making up my own dances when I was very young. Yeah. I was also, like, competing them, and I had very big ideas always. Like, I remember that. So I guess that's creativity.
Yeah.
It was always kind of channeled towards dance, where, like, I look at my daughter now, and she like loves fashion design, and she likes to play the drums, and she likes to act, and she likes to sing, and she likes, like, there's a lot of different things. I think I was really still pretty focused, but I guess creative.
Yeah. When did, like, the, like, how did that develop further as you got older? Like,
yeah, I think just naturally, you know, as a dancer, as you get into professional spaces, like, for me, a lot of it was teachers and mentors and choreographers saying, like, hey, can you come into a studio and start working with me? And then you have to bring your creativity to the table. You're not only a body that's doing the movement, you are giving ideas, you are, it's a collaboration. So I think that's when the creativity really started in me. And, you know, I've always been a teacher. And I think that's another thing, is growing up in a studio, I watched my mom teach, and she's an amazing teacher. And I was always student teaching. And so throughout my professional career, you know, when I moved to New York, before I booked a job, I was teaching dance. And it was a way that I didn't have to wait tables, you know, it was a way for me to survive. And I really loved it. So I was always choreographing on students. I was always making up dances. I was always, doing pre-professional kind of work. And then when I got in those professional spaces, that's when the creativity really started digging in. And then, of course, when I was given the opportunity to actually, you know, choreograph myself and, you know, truthfully, that was on So You Think. I mean, that's another whole story, but that was basically one of my first professional choreography jobs was on national television. So
that's nuts.
Knee deep. Yeah. That story is a little bit nuts because it was kind of a fluke, a little bit of an accident, a little bit of like preparation meets opportunity, I suppose. I had finished dancing in the Celine Dion show in Vegas. It was a 5-year run. So it was a very long contract. Like I said, I'd already undergone some surgeries. And I was like, I'm not sure I want to jump right into another show that's really intense. I was teaching. I was trying to figure out what was next. And of course, I watched So You Think You Can Dance. When I got a phone call from my mom that said, So You Think You Can Dance is coming to Canada, because they called her about her studio and students. Okay. So I was like, got off the phone and I said to my boyfriend then, husband now, I said, you know, this is so great. So You Think it's coming to Canada. This is so great for Canadian dancers. I'm always looking out for Canadian opportunities because it's just, there's less of them for dancers in Canada. So I'm like, this is awesome. It's going to catapult all these dancers into their careers. And he just turned to me and he said, well, you should choreograph on the show. And my husband's an actor. And I just put my hand in his face and I said, you do not know what you're talking about. Stay in your lane. I haven't done anything professionally. So another couple of days go by and he's like, you know what? Maybe we should just find out who's casting it. Like, it doesn't hurt to kind of just submit. And I said, again, honey, like, I love you, but you don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. No, oh no. So about a week goes by and I come home from work and he says, okay, don't be mad at me. And then I say, what did you do?
Yeah.
And he pulls behind his back a piece of paper that's a typed out response to an email that says, Dear Stacey, thank you so much for your inquiry on choreographing on So You Think You Can Dance Canada. We absolutely would love to see your reel and a self-tape. Could you please get that to us by Friday? So I turned to him and I'm like, what did you do? He's like, well, I just wrote a little email saying like what you've done and, you know, that you're interested. And so he like researched the whole thing. So there we are. I'm like, okay, now I have to go through with this. So now I'm like, what do I do? Because I didn't have a reel. So a choreography reel is basically little bits of all your work, right? Kind of edited together in a little flash so that they can see kind of the gist of you.
Yeah.
And I said to him, like, how are we going to do something like this? And so he was like, we're just going to do it. So I pulled together my friends and we shot things in different places and pulled together a little bit of like pre-professional work that looked pretty professional, edited it all together, submitted it. And I was pretty proud. I was like, you know what? This isn't like, it doesn't look terrible. It wasn't the most professional thing, but a couple of weeks later, we were in Costco and I will never forget this memory. And my cell phone rang and I answered the call and it was the executive producer of So You Think You Dance Canada. And she hired me right on the spot for 6 episodes.
Amazing.
And literally I showed up day one on the set with these experienced choreographers that were way more experienced than me that have done musicals and film and television. And here I was, and I just had to, you know, go for it and trust myself. And from there, the American producers saw me and invited me on the American show, and the rest is history. That visibility brought me into my career.
Yeah. Oh, that's crazy. Like, big thanks to your husband. Like, that's amazing. He loves
that story, of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, my wife and I watched back when it was on the Canadian one, and that's where we fell in love with you. So my wife's also very excited that I'm talking with you today. Yeah.
It's a great show. It was so much fun to work on and I learned so much. It was kind of like a crash course in just kind of preparing as much as you can, doing your job and then letting it go because it's live television. And that like has really taught me a lot for every project since then, really.
Yeah. Well, and it's crazy that live TV element, like, there's really no preparing for that. And like, you weren't prepared for it because it was your first thing.
Exactly. Well, you know, what's interesting too, is that it's actually kind of set me up for so many other things that have kind of, like I said, so much of it is like preparation meets opportunity, but it's also like risk-taking. Like I truly believe that if you have something that you like as a creative, you have your eye on something. And then it's like that saying that like, if you believe you can, or you believe you can't, you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. There is a little bit of the like, okay, I'm going to throw myself in before I'm ready. That's needed in a creative pursuit. Like you're never fully prepared, you know? And I found like since then, same thing when I became a director, like the opportunity came and I was like, okay, I guess I'm doing this, but I've been doing this for almost 30 years. I've been directing dances and, you know, just all of a sudden the title's there and it feels like pressure, but really I've found that, I mean, I'm always on a learning curve. I think I love learning and I love curiosity, but I've rarely felt prepared for anything that's been thrown at me and I've always made it through. So that's a lesson.
How does that work? Like when you're coaching and when you're, cause it's, you know, there's a very thin line between like pushing yourself too hard and doing things before you're prepared. Like, how do you talk about it with your students?
Well, yeah. And it's interesting too, because I think it's one of those things that like, we're very good at preparing ourselves. I think as dancers, we're very good at like kind of exercising our craft and taking 3 ballet classes a week. And, you know, it's for me, it's like putting the dancers, like in my program, we put the dancers in situations that feel a bit scary, you know, before they feel like they're ready and see how they can, because a lot of the time when what I've learned since then, I'm very interested in like sports psychology and mindfulness and meditation. And I've taken some courses in that, and confidence comes from putting yourself in situations that you've never done before. And kind of like, I don't know if I can do this, and just getting through them. You don't have to win. You don't have to succeed or be the best. You just have to, your system just needs to know that was scary and I did it. You know, that's one part of it. And the other part's the self-talk. So, you know, for example, like I like to put my dancers in situations before they're ready. This last weekend, my 20 dancers in my program self-produced, choreographed, and directed their very own show. Sold tickets, marketed, amazing. Lit, did the lighting, did the costuming, did the music. And they had to work together to do that. And the reason was because I want them to have that experience before the professional one comes, you know? Yeah. So I think it is a balance between the kind of the grind of like the exercising, just the things you need to kind of have the skills, and then being thrown, just go do this, you know, and see what it's like. And it's nice to do it in a safe environment that is a program, you know, that's kind of encouraging that. Mine was more on the professional, in the professional world, but I think there's a space for that.
Yeah, for sure. One thing that's so interesting to me about choreographers and dancers in general is like, you have to collaborate with other people, you have to, and their personalities, but you also have to like, you need music and you need, talk to me about your relationship collaborating and how you found your way through that.
You know, I love collaborating. Especially, I mean, I've had to collaborate in many, many, many different ways, right? As a dancer, collaborating with choreographers, collaborating with other artists. I mean, in my career, I rarely danced by myself. It was always with an ensemble or another person. I mean, sometimes by myself, but that collaboration is key. And I think a dancer needs to be able to bring that to the table. I love collaborating with musicians. I think I can't play a musical instrument at all. I can't read music, but I am driven and inspired by music so deeply. So I've had a couple experiences that I've had like collaboration from the very ground up in projects, which is so fun to be able to like make movement. And then the musical director's looking at it going like, oh, do you think that the strings here? And you're just like, yes. You know, and then I'm like, I can get a string there. I can get a cello. I can, you know, this, it's like a playground. So, and I don't think we get that much as choreographers. I think it's a little bit more rare that you get those projects from the ground up that really have the musicians. And you also have to have kind of a synergy with that person too. I collaborate a lot with directors as well, which can be hit or miss, you know. Again, too, it's like, it's interesting to think, you know, that you get on a project and the director's like, oh, you know, I just really like to think outside the box. And I'm like, oh, me too. That's great. And you're verbalizing it all. And then when you get into a studio, thinking outside the box can mean very different things, right? So an exercise in give and take. But I do enjoy it. I think I'm always up for a challenge. And I think that collaborating can be challenging and also like super rewarding.
Yeah. You're like, I like thinking about the box outside the box, just not like that.
Yeah, because you're like, well, his idea of outside the box is not like my idea.
Let's keep that in the box, please. Yeah,
exactly.
How does it work with like preset like music pieces? Because I imagine sometimes they're like limiting. Like you're like, I have this great idea, but then the piece you're giving is like how's that given that pull and push?
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting because everything has some kind of like constraints on it, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, So You Think, the pieces were only a minute and a half, which is not a lot of time.
No. It's
like a snippet in time. And something has to happen in that minute and a half. You know, it's our job to, at least I really felt passionate about telling a story. So you've got a beginning, middle, and end very quickly, and the music has to kind of follow that. So that would be really tricky sometimes. So like in those situations, it's just about like kind of trying to edit it and not butcher the song and trying to make it make sense. And then other times, you know, that's where it's just so beautiful to be able to like, you know, when I produced my own show with my dance company, I had a composer come in and I'm like, okay, I really love the style and the section of this song. Can you like elongate it for like 15 minutes? And it's like, you know, and then you're getting to like do so many wonderful things, but you know, every job has the constraints of it, you know. Then now I've been working on a couple new musicals and that's a whole different collaboration because the music really serves the story in a musical. Yep. And also there is flexibility where you're like, okay, I need a little bit longer dance section and they can kind of draw that out, you know? So you kind of have to play within the, you know, within the kind of boundaries that you're given. In collaboration, you always kind of have to fight for what you want and also let go of it, you know?
It's a dance.
Exactly.
I think it's so interesting that you brought up like a minute and a half to like 15 minutes to play. Like that's such a wide range of, oh my goodness, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's very different. Very, very different.
And like, yeah, just mindset. And but you have to kind of be able to do the minute and a half, like, right? To be able
100%.
Yeah.
Even like less than that. Like I remember choreographing an Advil commercial, like, you know, it's been just like, it's like 30 seconds and you're trying to like, you know, you've got the client and you've got the, you know, the director and everyone's kind of like trying to get their own thing. And you're like, I'm just trying to get this 30 seconds to say something. So it is really, it's beautiful to like kind of know your audience, know your task. And then I really like the challenge. Some choreographers really like to stick in one lane. They're like, I like to have a full evening length work. I only work in 20 to 40 minute pieces. I kind of like, let's go. I got a 30 second challenge and then I've got like an hour and a half length work. I mean, there's, I think there's something to discover in all of it.
Yeah, I love that. Do you think that your time on So You Think You Can Dance like had an influence on what you're doing now? Like seeing those young performers and like, cause it's pretty like these, a lot of them are like young and you're, and I imagine you're in this for the first time, like on this level. And then like, I imagine that was interesting and like maybe stayed with you.
Yeah, that, I mean, that experience of course has stayed with me, that chapter. I was also like on for 10 seasons. So it was, I was the newbie, but then I was ended up being, you know, the one that was, you know, was helping the newbies that came onto the show. And I think the dancers on that show are remarkable. What they are kind of put through and expected, you know, like even for us, when we would get something into, like we would find out we have these two dancers, you know, I always went in with a preparation. Like I was always like, I had my piece choreographed, but then you don't know who you got, like, and you have to pivot really quickly. And those dancers, I mean, they're getting 4.5-5 hours with the choreographer to learn the piece and execute it well enough. And then they're on live television. So it's not a lot of time. And they, I mean, I would see by the end of the finale, like things that you wouldn't, well, sometimes they would put it in, but you know, dancers were getting IV pumps, you know, full of oxygen. They were on oxygen. They were like backstage. I mean, they're going through so much.
Yeah.
But I also know that the dancers coming off that show, a lot of them I hired again and again and again, because I was like, if you can do that, you can also do 8 shows a week, or you can learn this and be able to, you know, have the skills to do it well. So I think there's something to be said about the vulnerability of being on live television, you know, like they have cameras on them at all times, you know, and there's not really a lot of getting away from it. So I think there's a certain kind of vulnerability and openness to those dancers that is really remarkable. And I also think that the show's not for everyone. There's been dancers that have come to me and been like, should I audition for this show? And I'm like, do you feel like you really want to do it? And they're like, not really. It seems like I wouldn't. And I'm like, well, then maybe you shouldn't do it. You know, it's not for everyone. So yeah, but it's definitely, it was obviously such a launch pad for so many dancers and for so many choreographers as well.
Mm-hmm. How does it work for you? Like, what comes first? Do you have some like movement in your mind and then you match it to a music piece? Or is like, does music kind of like get under your skin and then you start developing it? Like, how does that work?
Ah, that's a good question. I think inspiration kind of comes from everywhere. And then the process for me, I was trying to think about this. It doesn't always start with music and it doesn't always start with movement. It kind of varies, but it does always start with intent. Like it starts with, what do I want people to feel? Like, what is the seed of the emotion or the feeling that I want to portray? And that's kind of usually where it starts. Sometimes I'll hear a song and immediately I think of like, oh my gosh, this makes me feel like this. I need to move to it. Mm. Other times I think I want to say this and I do come up with movement first and then try to match a song to it. But it's always like that, like, and it can be from anything. Like it could be like, I could be watching a film and I get inspired by it, or I could be walking down the street and I see two people having a conversation that I can't even hear what they're saying. And I'm like, oh, I want to do that. Like it could be body language. So yeah, for me, I think it's like, it's got us, what is it saying? Like, that's, I think, where I start. And I don't always start at the beginning. I actually usually don't start at the beginning. I usually start somewhere in the middle of the piece. So I don't go in a linear kind of fashion. It's kind of little pieces and then kind of comes together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the like human quality that everyone can relate to, you know, like I think everyone can understand like when, you know, someone, you know, is walking away and they just like grab their wrist and they turn back. Like, I love those like little moments where you're like, you don't have to be a dancer. It's not that abstract. It's actually quite simple. And I think that's where I steal from like watching people, you know, and like,
I like that.
Yeah. It's like that human quality that we can like all kind of relate to. I like that mixed in with things that are so fantastical that a lot of people can't do. Right.
It's it's like that human element that all of us can, and then fantastic.
Yeah, like everyone's like, how did you do that? You know, I think it's really interesting.
Oh, I love that so much. So you said you were watching like in your mom and everything, but growing up, was there anything that like really stood out? Like I imagine you had to kind of, maybe it happened around 17, but like that you had to kind of take it on as your own love and not just, you know what I mean? Like something that brought you to that, this is mine now.
Yeah, I remember watching when I was young, and I think because for a long time it is kind of entangled when it's like so close. It's my family. Like it's my mom, my brother's a dancer, my sister's a dancer.
Oh my goodness.
And there was just this trajectory of like, that's what we did. My aunt owns a dance studio. Like it's very much in our family. And I think it can get entangled in, like, was it me that loved it, or was it because it was just there and I did it and I excelled at it? And there wasn't really a separation. And I did really know that I wanted to do it. That was deep and that was true to me. I can remember something that just came to me, and it always stands out in my mind. And it was when I took my very first trip to New York. I had never been. And there's a drop-in dance studio here called Broadway Dance Center, and it's very famous. And I remember going there and taking like 4 classes in one day, the first day I got there. And I remember this so distinctly. Afterwards, I was sitting down, I was having a little bit of lunch, and I was sitting on the stoop outside the studio, and this flood of energy just came into me. And I was like, this is it. Like, I have to be here. Like, I need to live in New York. Like, I cannot describe it. I don't know what it was. It was just this feeling of like, this is home. Like, this is where I'm going to be. And I don't know if that was divine intervention or what it was, but that memory comes up. And I think I've spoke of it many times. And I think when I really break it down, it's because like, that's when I was truly decided, like, I'm going to do this, like for no one else, because no one else was there. My mom wasn't there. You know, no one else that knew me, none of my mentors were there. It was just like, you know what? I this is what I want. And that really stood out to me. And I was probably 19, maybe 20. So Yeah, it wasn't like right away. It was kind of like I had a little bit of my professional career in Vancouver, but it was something really pulled me. And it's still like I live just outside the city. And every time I go into New York, I'm like, I just love it. Like, I don't know. It's, I think some people either love it or hate it. And it's a place that just inspires me deeply. So that definitely was something pulling me into saying, like, you can do this, you know, whatever.
It's so interesting too, that it seems so tied to New York, like, as well. Like, it was like being that city and some like, and dancing there, those two things combined kind of was like the thing that really put it over the top. You're like, this is mine.
Yeah. And also too, like, it was also, like I said, this is mine. I have to do it. And also I have no idea how, because remember, I'm 19, 20 years old. I have no money. I'm Canadian. I'm living in Vancouver across the other side of a different country. And it was also, I think, what's so powerful about it, because I think so many dancers, well, and people, I mean, it's hard. You're always trying to figure out the how before you figure out the what. And if you really need to figure out, really what you need to figure out is the what and the why.
Yeah.
And then you figure out the how. And that stood out to me, because in that moment, like, I was unstoppable. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I got off. The next day I called my parents. I said, I'm moving to New York. And they were like, what? You know, my mom was like, oh, that's great, honey. You know, like, she kind of knew that that dance was my thing. And my dad kind of was like, okay, how are you doing this? Like, I support you. And how are you getting an apartment? You know? And I basically went back to Vancouver and I worked so many jobs. I saved every cent I had. I think I saved $5,000 Canadian, which I thought was so much money. And then I changed it to US dollars and it was like $500 or something. And I knew of one friend of my mom's that lived in New York. I called him up. I said, can I live on your couch? He said, yep. I lived on his couch for 2 weeks and I literally took a number off the bulletin board at the dance studio, found a roommate, started teaching for cash under the table. Like, it wasn't easy. It definitely wasn't easy. And I remember those times and I'm really grateful that I had those days when, like, all I could afford was a bagel and a 50-cent coffee from a little truck on the side of the street. And I had five roommates and I, you know, I taught dance and I gathered all my change in a little container and held it in my room, you know, like, you know, eventually, obviously, like, I got sponsored and I had people help me and I, you know, got big breaks in my career. But it started out with this desire, this dream, and full perseverance. Like,
How's it been being on the other side of that? Do you see your students like at that kind of place where you are and you're like, all right, now you're on your own?
I do. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about something like the Bridge Movement, because I'm like, I also know that there was things that I was not equipped for that I want them to be equipped with, like skills. And that's like dealing with rejection. It's like also the power of our minds. You know, I find it fascinating that Olympic athletes have mindset coaches, but dancers don't, you know, we don't train that part. So, and I knew that I had kind of done a little bit of it accidentally myself, but I think, gosh, if I had these tools, it would have been so much easier. So definitely preparing them with those things that I wish I would have had, more knowledge about my body and how to take care of it, more focus on community, so that when you are facing rejection as you're auditioning, that you know that it's not personal, that you have this like core group of people to come back to. You know, I think that these things are really important. And also I'm seeing kind of less, I mean, it always, isn't it? Every generation says like, well, my generation, but I do feel like this generation is a little bit more tentative, you know? And I think that has something to do with social media, like kind of feeling like every misstep is going to be blasted. I think there's a bit of like, I'm a bit nervous to make it because everyone's going to see me fail, but there is a bit more hesitation. So again, too, we try to, you know, just try to encourage dancers, like, you know, it is a different time, of course. And also I moved here with a suitcase, you know, and 19 years old, knowing one person, like you can do it. You know, I think that, a lot of it's just trying to get them set up so that they can trust themselves, that they can do whatever it might be that they want to do.
Yeah. Well, that's huge. If we were to talk about your creativity and how you interact with it, and you said it's like, you know, you pull these human elements. If you were to give your creativity like a physical form in your mind's eye and how you interact with it, what would that look like?
A physical form. I don't, the first thing that comes to mind is like, I really like circular movement. So yeah. I think it's a little bit of like a visual of that, but like these, like almost like spiraling, like waves, like I yeah. see blues and greens and spiraling waves that you can kind of like hide behind, but also kind of come out from because I kind of like a little bit of like something left your imagination, but we're also going to make you feel something. I love a swirl. So I feel like it's these kind of like spiraling wave type swirls.
Yeah, I love it. Do you like jump into that or does it influence you? Like how?
Oh, I think, well, I love water too. So maybe that's why. Thinking of the kind of waves, but I kind of like this oscillation between like surrender and control, because I think yeah. there's so much control to be able to do the movement that really I love to see. And also there's an element of that's so powerful when you see people completely just like surrendered and abandoned into whatever they're feeling.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think maybe these grand kind of swirls feel like it kind of sucks me into that a little bit.
Yeah. It's like a little bit of both. It's control yeah. and complete surrender. Exactly. I love it. I like that before. I thought I was going to mention it about being like Olympians and everyone, they train with like mentality coaches, and like even more so with dancers, you're asked to be so vulnerable and like act. And then like when you are vulnerable like that, like it's not naturalness. Like you have to learn how to be vulnerable and then also protect yourself. And like, I think it's, I love that you brought it up, and like, it's something. Yeah.
Also like what other profession do you like, you can literally stand in a line and they're like, no, yes, no. Like you're just, it's so harsh in so many ways, and it is changing a little bit, but like, you really have to look a certain way. You have to fit the bill in so many places that you have to fit into, that it's just kind of like, it's challenging, like even before you get to the movement part of it, you know? So I do think that that is shifting a little bit. And I do also encourage dancers to like, look at the peripheral interests. Cause I think it was a bit unhealthy. Obviously I was very driven and I was very like dance, 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 but I didn't really widen that as early as I would have liked to, you know. Now I think back, like you're just so much more expansive and so much more hireable when you identify that there's more to you than just this one love of dance. And when you start exploring these interests, they could feed into supporting you as an artist. You know, there's dancers that are like, well, I really love like editing film. And I'm like, that's great. Look at, you can have a side hustle. You can be editing dancers' reels, you know? So it's practical and also supportive in a creative endeavor, because I want to know all the parts of you, because that's what makes you interesting. So I think that kind of peripheral interest is also, it's important.
Yeah. And you never know what is good. Like it influences, even if you're not aware of it. Right.
Exactly. And that's why I think a lot of times, you know, dancers are, when they're young, they're like really excited to get hired, obviously. But a lot of times, like dancers I'm hiring are actually more seasoned, they're more experienced. Like it, there's nothing more powerful than when you see, like we call elders, but they're not really elder, right? They're like, you know, if they're in their 40s or 50s, like, because there's so much experience to back what they're saying. So yeah, just trying to tap into, because I think dancers can think, well, it's all about like how high I kick and like what I can do. And it really is. I think it's much deeper and broader than that.
Mm-hmm. As you said that, I had a thought, and like, I just would love to know your thought on this. Sometimes like in any performance, there's like perfect, and then there's like emotionally perfect. I'm kind of butchering, but like when someone might not be as technically skilled as someone else, but they have that, where it's still like, it's just, it doesn't matter that it wasn't perfect. What's your thoughts on all that, as someone who probably wants things to be perfect as you choreograph them?
Well, you know what? I actually don't think perfect exists.
Yeah.
I think perfect is literally an energy suck. And I am saying this from a recovering perfectionist. So is, I know what you're saying, like this idea of there's a certain way that it needs to be executed. And it is a very precise art in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Just
depending on which style you're doing, especially something like ballet is a very, very precise art. And it's kind of black and white in its, you know, in a little bit of like the execution of it. I find this is actually a little bit of it's an issue for a lot of dancers, is this trap of perfectionism because it's so limiting. It's unachievable. So therefore you're striving and striving and striving for something that doesn't exist. And in the meantime, what you're crushing is literally all the gifts that you have that make you individual. And my style of dancing takes a lot of technique, which is where perfectionism loves to, you know, to just blossom, is like when it's hard, perfectionism comes in. And also I will hire the dancer that takes the risks, that makes me feel something, that's a bit more vulnerable, and I'm even not scared to make mistakes, that gets a bit messy, that can take direction, that can, you know, collaborate and give me something. I find them much more interesting than the perfectionist. I think the perfectionist is a little dull, to be honest, because you're kind of, again, too, you're behind a lot of the times, you're behind this kind of glass of like, I've got to be a certain way. So it's just the striving, again, not for you. What I'm interested in is what you have, what makes you different than the person beside you. I've been doing this for almost 30 years. And it's like, I don't want to watch the same thing over and over again. Even when it's my movement, I want to see it interpreted through you. So if I can empower dancers to know, and I truly believe that everyone has a gift or a light that's really special and unique to them. And yes, I want you to be specific with my choreography, but I don't want you to be limited by it. I think it takes shape differently on different people. And that's the beauty of it. That's the inspiring part for me, to see it reflected back with a sense of that dancer and not this sense of I'm trying to do it the way you want me to do it or the way it's supposed to be, you know?
Yeah. I'm sure that's really exciting sometimes when it, like, cause that is collaboration. It, like, you've given it to them and then they
100%
take it to the next level.
I think of the story all the time when I was on So You Think, I made up the choreography ahead of time. So I'd made it up with two professional contemporary dancers, very talented. And then I get told, okay, you have Catherine McCormick, who's a contemporary dancer, and Legacy.
Okay, yeah.
And I went, Legacy, so what style does he do? And they said, well, he's a b-boy. And I said, oh, so he's a hip-hop dancer. And they're like, no, he's a b-boy. Like, he's never learned choreography. He's like, we found him on Santa Monica Boulevard spinning on his head. And I said, okay. So I'm in rehearsal with them tomorrow. So I'm already replaying in my head this duet that I've made that is not going to work.
Yeah.
So what I will say about that process is we got in there and Legacy was like, I am ready to, you know, work as hard as you need me to work. And I was like, okay, you know what? I got to be flexible here. I can't, this little perfect duet that I made up, that's no longer going to serve you. So like, what can we do that's interesting? You know? And he's like, well, I can spin on my head and then like slide across the floor and then like pick her up in a lift. And I was like, well, I've never choreographed that. Let's do it. So right before they go out, I said, and I always say this to everyone, I said, you know what? Enjoy every moment. It doesn't matter what happens. Just be out there and live it, you know, like just get in. So they went out there and they were doing just that. And I was like, everyone was like feeling what happened. Well, one part happened where he was supposed to kind of gently pull her leg and he pulled it too hard and she fell. And then she got back up and they kept going. They get off stage and everyone was in tears because everyone was like, what just happened? And we've never seen Legacy do this and all these things. And I get back and I was like, I'm so proud of you. Like, that was just so like, I'm just like, I felt every moment. And Catherine, she's like, did you see me fall? Like, didn't you see me fall? And I said, you fell? Like, I did not even see her fall. And that was because they were so invested in the story. And I was so like, and I choreographed it. Like, I would be the first one to see it. I didn't see it. And that piece, which was in my head going to be a disaster, was my first Emmy nomination. Oh, wow. That's like a perfect story of like, it's live. It's like every performance is in a sense live. And, you know, you have to kind of go with it. And how you react is the most important thing. And that, yeah, that if I focused on perfect, I would have been super devastated by that piece. And yet it didn't bother me at all. Like what happened? And I watched back the video and I was like, oh, she did fall. But I didn't notice it because I was too engaged in what they were doing.
Yeah, that's incredible. On the flip side of all that, what frustrates you as a creative person, as a choreographer, or as a... everything you do, like, is there anything in the process that you're just like, oh, this part though?
All the time. what frustrates me, let's see. Well, what frustrates me in my process is when, like, like a writer's block, you know, Greg, like get in a studio, you're like, I have this many hours to like come up with something and nothing's coming, or you just hate everything you're doing, or you're like, I've done that before. Like, you get in habits of movement that just kind of come out of you naturally. And then you're like, after this many years, you're like, oh, I'm doing that again. And yeah, that, and once you get into, again, too, it goes back to like the mindset. Once you get in that block of like, well, I'm good. We all do it. It doesn't matter what, you know, what stage you are in your career. We all do. We have self-doubt. And so I think that like the cycles of the self-doubt and the frustration just completely block me. Like that's one thing that I say, you know, and in that, what I've learned to do in that is just like, I say, put a placeholder, like get something out, close the day, come back. Hopefully you have another day to come back and look at it, and look at it with fresh eyes. But it's tricky getting that headspace for sure. And the other thing that blocks me too, and this is kind of for dancers to know, and I think it goes back to that perfectionism piece again as well. A lot of the times if dancers have that perfectionism, or they feel like they want to show up in a certain way, they can come in with an energy that can be really blocking as well. Because they're being hard on themselves, maybe if it's not going well for them personally. But what it reads like to me is they don't want to be there. They're bored. They don't like it, you know. So energetically, I'm very sensitive. So if it really is important to me, who I bring into my spaces, who I hire is really important. And not that I need someone to roll out the red carpet. It's not that. Yeah. It's more of like I'm sensitive to the energy that feels blocked, or that can block me, that feels a bit negative or heavy. And usually that's not coming from a dancer wanting to be like that. It's usually coming from them being hard on themselves. But I'd say, yeah, those things block me.
How do you work through that block, like with a student or with yourself?
Oh, well, with a student, it's really hard in the moment to work through that. You know, I think it's like the constant reminder of like, what is actually happening, you know. A lot of the times if that energy happens, like I will have a conversation with the dancer, and a lot of times I will not invite the dancer back. Like it's as simple as that, you know. We have limited amounts of time sometimes to come up with things, and so that can be a real block. And for myself, I just am trying, I try to give myself a little bit more of a break. Like not everything has to be this wow factor. Like it's really just like, I imagine if I was a writer and I would write my first draft and then you edit it, right? So it's just like giving yourself that permission to like be bad, to put something in there. And like, that's hard to say, you know. I want everything that I do to be well thought out and executed well, but it's just not true. Some things I photograph are great, some other things are really bad. So I think kind of getting okay with being bad at things and being observed in that, you know. A lot of the times things either aren't ready, or even if they are, you have no control over how people perceive your art. You know, so your job is not to worry about what they think about it, you know. It's to kind of just create it and release it and then walk away. And that's a hard lesson to learn.
It's also tough because it's so exciting when it goes the other way, when you have that lightning strike and everything's falling, because that's like the best part, but you're not going to get that every day.
And it's hard too, because it's like social media exasperates that, right? Yeah. So I remember when I was doing the show, there was only Twitter, but still, like, of course I would get on after the show would air, I'd get on and there's all these comments. And at first I would try to respond to everybody, because I was like, this is so cool. People are, you know, they're my fans and I want to respond back and say thank you. And, you know, and then it got to be so many that it would be like, of course there'd be like the stream of good comments. And then there'd be that one comment that was like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. And you're just like, ah, it's so crushing, you know. But I think it gets easier. Does it? It doesn't get that easier. You get better at dealing with it, I think.
Okay. What keeps you motivated, keeps you going?
I think in things that I create, curiosity, you know, like I said, I've been doing this for a long time. So finding things that feel new or nothing's new to me, you know, like always that curiosity and that play. Truthfully, like the older that I get and the more like I've had to, you know, I've been out of dancing for like the hip replacements and all these other things. Now, when I do move my body and I get to be in a creative experience, I don't take it for granted. It makes me feel so alive. So I think, you know, to get a feeling of that, like aliveness, it keeps me motivated for sure. And now, you know, a lot of the times it's through dancers. So it's like finding a way to, you know, kind of allow them the pathways that I maybe used to do myself and feel motivated by watching them be inspired, you know, if that makes sense, kind of like the torch a little bit. I really, truly love mentoring dancers. I love kind of seeing the possibility in them that they don't see. So that's another part of it. It's not all the creativity. It's kind of like just watching them or giving them the little bits that they need to believe in themselves so that they can also, you know, be in their creative process.
Yeah, I love that. Can you tell me about standout in the last 6 months of the creative standout that's really stayed with you that you're like, oh, I'm really proud of that? Or
yeah, I think what comes to mind was I directed and choreographed a new musical that actually went up at the Toronto Fringe this past summer. I don't know if that's 6 months, but I think that's the most recent one that I've been for mine. And first of all, it was the first time that I had directed a musical. My husband was in it. It was the first time I had directed my husband as an actor.
Oh, that's so cool.
The show has like a lot of dancers. So I was able to bring this incredible cast of dancers together. It was a fringe production, which meant that we had not a lot of time to put it together. I'd say like 2.5-3 weeks. And it was a full hour and a half show with music and a full band and the whole thing. And it was really, I think I was really proud of myself because I stepped into that. Like I directed things, you know, my own projects, but for someone else to entrust me with that director choreography role and to be able to accomplish that much in a short amount of time. And it was really well received. I was so, so proud. And now it's like the project's taking off. So it's so very exciting. Also just being back in Canada, it's a full Canadian story. Canadian cast feels really like prideful. I don't know. There's something about Canadians in the States that just feel like when you come home and you're like, yes, I'm doing something in Canada, it makes me so excited. So yeah, I think that's the show that that's a project I'm really proud of. And I'm also proud that it's getting traction and it's now it looks like it's going to be doing an off-Broadway version of it in New York. So that's
very so cool. That's so cool. Do you have anything coming up that we can kind of look for or hear about or anything like that?
Well, I mean, we're working right now a lot with the Bridge Movement and their, you know, final showcase and that's my like daily grind. I tour on the Nouveau Dance Convention, which is on the weekends to different cities, which I love doing that work as well, just teaching. As far as professional projects, I have that musical I just spoke of, Dancer, which will be hopefully going up next spring. But there's another musical I'm working on called Pump Up the Volume, loosely based on the film with Christian Slater.
I love that film.
And it's opening in upstate New York at Syracuse Stages coming up in September. Yep. So that's kind of, we're in pre-production right now, but if anyone's in the area of that, it's like, it'll be open, gosh, I think mid-September is when it opens. So
that's awesome.
That's kind of what I'm working on as far as like bigger projects right now.
Oh, that's so cool. And Pump Up the Volume, what an interesting.
Telling you know, there's a lot of movies that are turning into musicals and I'm, not the hugest fan of it, to be honest, but this is so well done. The music and the score and the story, it's like really heartfelt. It's got a great, and it's like set in the 90s, which of course,
that's so cool.
So fun for people to remember the 90s. And we've got some incredible talent on it. So it's very exciting.
That's so cool. Thank you so much. This went by so quickly. Thank you for letting me pick your brain and hearing about your creative process and like, oh man, it's just been such a treat.
Oh, likewise. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Where can we find you on social media and all that stuff?
Yeah, I'm at SJ Tukey is my handle for my personal, and at thebridge.movement is the Bridge Movement if anyone's interested in that, and at Protege Movement, which is for the younger dancers as well.
Nice. Stacey, thank you so much.
Of course. It's been a pleasure.
Stacey's great, isn't she? Seriously, just go to YouTube and like binge a bunch of her dances on there. I did that when I was preparing this episode, and I watched the one that that she was talking about in this episode with the fall. But I think it was like the season finale version where they call the dancers back. So the fall wasn't in there. So I'd like to see if I could see it on YouTube. I'm sure it's on there somewhere. But like, honestly, spend an hour and just like watch a bunch of her dances, because like, I don't know, it'll just lift your spirits. Also, I wonder if she's going to be on the newest season that just started. So I'll have to look for that. She didn't allude to it at all, but you never know. I love what she had to say about perfectionism being an energy suck and how to build confidence. I just love everything that Stacey's doing to help dancers, and I'm glad that we got to glean a little bit of that for ourselves today. This episode was a long time coming, and I am so glad that it finally happened. Stacey, thank you for being on the podcast this week. Thank you for your work and for the insights and guidance that you shared with us today. The podcast this week was produced by me, Ryan Leacock, with music by Dusty Dex. I love this intro track. It's like my new favorite one. It's so good. Big thank you to Josh of Mixed Media Sound for cleaning up these sounds. And thank you to you. Thank you for listening today. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. And if you like this episode, I don't know, post a story and tag us at creativepeople.podcast. Have a good week, guys. Show up, do the work. And you know that creative, interesting life you're waiting for? You're literally doing it right now. Have a good week, guys. See ya.